The following episode may contain inappropriate material. Listener discretion is advised.
Hey everybody, this is Daryl Banks, co-creator of Green Lantern Kyle Rayner, and you're listening to the PVD Cast.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another installment of the PVD Cast. I am your humble host and your podcast purveyor, John Orlando, and welcome to episode number 383. I hope all is well with you out there, and thank you very much for checking out this episode of the PVD Cast. It's been said many times on this podcast when talking to an independent comic creator that you gotta have a variety in the tales and stories that you present to the public. Someone may not want a tale about superheroes, but is looking for something maybe a little more of a slice of life comic or whatnot. In order to do this, you gotta have a large catalog. And my guest on this installment of the PVD Cast has a very big catalog. My guest is Mario Candelaria, a comic book creator out of Philadelphia. And he's got some amazing, unique tales that you should check out. Whether we're talking about his horror comic, Killchella, maybe his kind of a Twilight Zone-esque type of book called Tales from the Pandemic, Fogline, which I think is an amazing concept, to even his wrestling comic, Kayfabe. Mario was nice enough to come on and talk to me a little bit about his projects and about pro wrestling as well. He's a huge pro wrestling fan. He even dabbled a little bit in the film community, and so we talk a little bit about that. I'd like to thank, of course, last week's guest, James Ferguson, for letting me know that Mario was out there and recommending him to be a guest. And so, James, thank you very much. And you know what? I'm not going to waste a lot of time. I want to get right into the conversation I had with Mario. But before I do that, I need to thank my sponsor, World's Greatest Comics. You know I gotta praise the store. I mean, it is an amazing store. If you haven't checked it out and you live in Central Ohio, shame on you. It's right down the road. It's at 5974 Westerville Road in Westerville, Ohio. And they got everything you need for your comic book fandom. They've got single issues, collections, graphic novels, toys, collectibles, a great pull system, literally hundreds upon hundreds of back issues, a friendly staff. They basically are like the Taj Mahal of comic book stores. Maybe you're saying, I'd love to check out the store, John, but I live in Philadelphia like Mario, or I live in New York City or Los Angeles or Houston, Texas. Well, guess what? They have a great website. You can go check them out over at wgcomics.com, and they're pretty active on their Facebook page as well. Just search for at WGComics. And I want to thank once again Jeff and all the fine folks down there at the store for being a supporter of the PVD Cast. It means the world to me, and I really honestly can't express how much I appreciate their support. All right, with that out of the way, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to throw it to a quick break, and on the other side of the break, you're going to hear my conversation with comic book creator Mario Candelaria. Ladies and gentlemen, I am sitting down this evening with a man that is a comic book creator, a writer. He's even done some film work. We're going to talk all about it. I'm joined by Mr. Mario Candelaria. Mario, how you doing, man?
Hey, I'm doing pretty good. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. I have to ask this first, because this is the first thing that popped into my mind when I started just, you know, checking out your stuff, man. Your website. Yes,
I am. Oh, no.
Your website is theothermarioc.com. Mm-hmm. Is that a little tongue-in-cheek reference to the Beastie Boys?
You know what? I can get take the answer and say yes, but no. I mean, we're all Brooklyn boys, but it's Mario Cantone is one of my favorite comedians of all time. So,
oh,
you know.
Oh, man. man. Okay. Yeah. I was thinking of Mario C, the producer. Intergalactic and the Hello Nasty album. That's where I was. Wrong on that. Sorry about that.
No, it's all right. Yeah, Mario Cantone. It's a nice little Easter egg that people ask, you know, so got to hit him with that.
There you go. There you go. All right, well, let's talk, man, about a lot of your projects. You know, I pulled a couple here. I would like to start off, first of all, though, with Killcella. Which was produced by Scout Comics. If I may, before we start talking about actually Killcella, can you give maybe the listeners a little background on Scout Comics? Because I'll be honest, I'm not familiar with them. I imagine that they're a smaller independent company, and I don't know if my listeners would be very familiar with Scout Comics either. So could you give maybe a little background if you can?
Yeah, absolutely. So Scout is, you hit it on the head, they are a smaller independent. As far as the big levels go, once you have Image and then Dark Horse and IDW, they're below that. They're below Boom, but they're on the rise. They're getting up there. They have a lot of visibility at shops, and they have a pretty good team that's consistently putting out books every week, you know, as far as new releases go. So they are an indie, but they're not like, I don't know if this place will be around still in 5 months type of indie. You know, they're making some waves out there. They're making connections and having brand recognition in the shops.
Okay, gotcha. Okay, cool. Now, how did they stumble across Killcella? Was there, like, you had already previously met and said, I'm going to produce this book for you guys? Or was it more, I've already produced the book and I'm looking for somebody to help me out with it? And that's where Scout Comics came into play.
No, it's just, I mean, it's a really boring story for this one. I just reached out. I found the submissions portal. Image said no. So then I was like, all right, what else we got out here? And, you know, I pitched it to Scout and they said yes. It wasn't an already completed book. It was something that, you know, I put together like a pilot up front of just the first few pages for the pitch. And they liked the premise and the story. And once we got the green light, we just went into production.
Cool. Well, let's talk about the book because it is very much a slasher horror tale, but it seems like, and you could tell me if I'm wrong, that there seemed to be a little bit of like social commentary thrown in there, you know, because through the samples I checked out, there seemed to be a little bit of like this, everybody's so distracted by technology type of a vibe to it. Am I right on that, or am I totally off base?
No, you're right. I mean, it's very of the time, right?
Yeah, right.
I mean, everywhere I go, everyone's staring at their phones. You're at the gym, someone would do a set of like 15 and then they'll spend 10 minutes on their phone in between sets. You know, it's a whole lot of just everybody is together, but they're also separated with their own technology and their own wants and, you know, desires. So we kind of play up with that a little bit, where this is a very much me obsessed cast of characters that come together. Even though they're friends, they're still, you know, very much all about how they look, what they're at the festival, you know, what some people more so like what they're wearing and having people take their pictures. So instead of just enjoying whatever it is going on at the festival itself.
What was your inspiration for writing the story?
Yeah, this is a really weird story, but I saw a news article several years ago now because I'm old. It was about a woman who paid five figures to get her body Coachella ready. Not just her body, like cosmetically, cool sculpting, seeing trainers, a couple of nip tucks here and there, but also getting her wardrobe set. The reason being in the interview was because she didn't want to just look good in her pictures. She wanted to make sure she looked good in the background of strangers' pictures. So I saw this and I was like, this is ridiculous. So I said it to my wife, and my wife thought I was messing with her. And it turns out that girl went to high school with my wife.
Wow.
I was like, oh, okay, this is awesome. This is fate. This has to get done.
Wow, that's a hell of an origin story, man, to that story. So how many issues of Killcella do you have out?
Four. It's a four-issue series. So we fully wrapped up a couple months ago, I think 2 months ago. And the trade should be hitting in October. Simon & Schuster is releasing the trade paperback for national release through major retailers.
Oh, that's cool. Awesome, man. That's really cool. Well, let's move on and talk a little bit about another project. And you know what? We're going to jump right to the meat and potatoes of it, man. I want to talk about Kayfabe
Volume 1 and 2. Yeah.
Let's do it, because I love wrestling. I love comics. I guess the question is that I'm sure some of the listeners are thinking, you know, why do a wrestling comic? Like, what inspired you to do this tale? And maybe can you even tell us a little bit about what we would see if we picked up one of the issues? Like, what is the basic summary of Kayfabe?
Yeah, so Kayfabe, the whole series, 1, 2, I think there's a third one as well, was produced by a bunch of friends who just wanted to tell a bunch of wrestling stories. And it was really 100,000% DIY. We have no backing, no real anything, right? So it's just a bunch of friends who just got together and said, hey, let's put together some short stories. You know, we love wrestling. Let's see what we can do. Tell some tales and then put it out there for the people. No Kickstarter or anything. I mean, this went just straight to some print on demand place. I forgot the name of it on top of my head, the Drive Through Comics. But yeah, you know, we made some and then we all bought a copies for ourselves for conventions or, you know, mementos or whatever. And just really sticking with the whole indie wrestling vibe of the whole thing, where it's, you know, where we all at the time, we all didn't have bigger names to sell projects, but together, you know, we came together and put together a pretty good card we felt. And then we did it again and again. So, you know, if the town is good, you got to keep going back. Right?
That's right. Absolutely. Absolutely. So who are some of your favorite wrestlers, maybe modern day and maybe in the past, you know?
All right. Yeah. Right now, like this day in 2023, I am feeling Carmelo Hayes, NXT champion. He just has the athleticism, but also just that, like that if factor, like, wow, this is that guy. So when he goes up there and says, I am him, there's no doubt in your mind, like, okay, yeah, he has the all to back it up. He's kind of like modern day Shawn Michaels, which makes mm-hmm. sense considering that's like his teacher. Throwback guy, Steve Corino. Steve Corino was my guy from ECW back in the day, fighting Dusty Rhodes, Jack Victory as his manager, going on stage and getting beat up by Fred Durst. I mean, during the height of Limp Bizkit, that was just so cool. He's also one of those NXT trainers now, but yeah, I mean, I can't pick a Mount Rushmore because it's always just like evolving depending on what I'm watching. I mean, I love the Young Bucks, you know, seeing them for years over AEW. I like what, you know, Darby Allin's always interesting to watch, but I'm more of like a flippy guy. Ray Phoenix, I always say whenever he's on the screen, it's just magic. But then, you know, sometimes I just like the big guys too. Give me Dijakovic or whatever mm-hmm. he's called now.
Yeah, right.
Or even a Punishment Martinez or a Damian Priest, you know, someone like that where it's like, all right, this is a big guy who can still move like Keith Lee, but, you know, he's going to do some hard hitting stuff as well as keep up with the flippy stuff that's going around. Talk about this for ages.
Yeah. And you know what? I'm going to comment on, you mentioned Steve Corino and
yeah. All right.
I was a huge ECW mark. I loved it. Nice. The thing that I always appreciated about ECW was you might be introduced to a person, and Steve Corino was that person for me. Like, I saw Steve Corino, I'm like, this guy, really? Like,
King of but, old school?
yeah. Like, I'm like, this guy's a chump. Like, what is this guy? And he's got Jack Victory with him, you know? Yep. And like, I totally like pissed on him, man. You know what I mean? For like the first couple of weeks, but then sooner or later, man, I was like, you know what? Okay. Like I bought into it. Like mm-hmm. that was the magic that they did in ECW. There was multiple examples I could name of people like the Baldies. When I first saw them, I'm like, what a bunch of idiots. Like, no way. These guys. But then, man, before you know it, like they're doing those promos in the streets of New York. And I'm like, oh, yeah. I'm hooked. These are some badass dudes, you know? But that was the one of the wonderful things about ECW was that ability to take somebody that you don't care about and make you care.
Amish Roadkill, right?
It really, yeah. I mean, that's Dorian, another one.
You're just like, all right, this guy's kind of a dirty porn guy, and then he's just an Amish guy that just says chicken, and that's it. But they got so over.
Yeah, the BWO. Like, the BWO, who would have thought? Like, you're making a parody of the NWO, but man, it got over like gangbusters.
They're still eating off of that.
Oh, they are, absolutely. Absolutely. I won't lie. I popped a couple weeks ago when they brought back the LWO to WWE. I thought that that was, I did. I enjoy the LWO. So do you, Do you have any cool like wrestling memorabilia that you're proud of or anything like that?
I'm staring. I have a whole belt collection here right now.
Oh, really? What belts you got?
Just looking at them now, I got the Raw Women's Championship, AEW Heavyweight Championship, Ring of Honor Heavyweight Championship, WWE Heavyweight, current Intercontinental Cody White Strap one. What else I got? Winged Eagle, Million Dollar Belt, and Big Gold.
Wow, nice, dude.
Yeah, my wife doesn't love it so much when I keep bringing new ones, but you know, it's got to make it look good. Yeah, I mean, you know, we have this unicorn horn that Big E gave to my wife at a house show once. So that's kind of special. I keep it on the Money in the Bank because, you know, when he won the Money in the Bank, I kind of put them together and didn't really take it apart since then. But yeah, you know, a couple things here and there.
I gotcha. So when did your fandom actually start?
Yeah, my grandma got me into it a long, long, long time ago back in Brooklyn. I think I was like 3, but probably just really when I was aware of it, you know, Saturday Superstar, Saturday Night Main Event, that type of stuff. You know, the Hulk Hogan era and the Ultimate Warrior, those guys. And then I kept it going. The In Your House era, I couldn't afford pay-per-views, of course, but I used to watch it on the Scrambled thing. Like the way guys watch Scrambled porn, I'm watching Scrambled pay-per-views. yeah, I just kept it going through there to the Attitude Era, straight on up. I mean, NWO stuff was phenomenal. I stopped when I went to college for a bit. That was 2003 when Brock Lesnar started coming up, but I came back for the ECW revival that they had, and then I stopped for a little bit after that. But then I came back when the network launched because I was like, $10 a month, I get the pay per views. Yeah, let's do this.
Yeah,
and I haven't stopped since. So that's 9 years now.
9 years that they've had the network, huh? Jeez, man. Wow. That blows my mind, Mario. That blows my mind. 9 years ago, you're right. But I don't know. It doesn't seem that long ago.
Yeah, and then just going to shows ever since then. I haven't been to a show this year, but I think I might try to go to Madison Square Garden SmackDown for my birthday in July. It's just fun watching the stuff, you know?
Yeah, I've always, as a kid, I was enamored with it as well. I remember like my first example of watching it in was Tully Blanchard was getting his ass kicked by Mad Dog Buzz Sawyer on TV. Like I caught the last few minutes of the match at my house, and I was captivated by this absolute lunatic guy, Buzz Sawyer, who was just barking like a dog, and I was captivated by it. And then shortly then after, I found Hogan, you know, Hulk Hogan and everything, and you know, that was, I was off to the races with it, man.
And that's the way to really get you in. I mean, Hulk Hogan did a great job of, I think, building the next generation of fans, just like John Cena did and just like Bianca Belair and Roman Reigns are doing now, right? It's all about who your favorites were when you started watching are going to be your favorites, you know, the rest of your life.
Absolutely. All right, well, let's get back to some of your comics here. Let's go to one that I know is probably the most unique and twisted tale I've heard in a while, and that is Fogline.
Okay, so awesome.
Do you want to tell the folks a little bit about Fogline?
Yeah, Fogline is probably the best thing I've ever written. It's about a man, Henry, who finds a true crime podcast that is focused on the disappearance of a woman 40 years ago, but he actually buried her in the woods from a hit-and-run car accident, and no one ever knew what happened to her. So he's just, you know, when he finds this thing, he just starts going down the rabbit hole of all the stuff he didn't know. Right. Pretty much something that's haunted him every day since then is now put back in his face in an immediate way.
Can you talk a little bit about the creative team for that book? Because I definitely want to compliment you guys that I feel like just the visuals are very haunting at certain parts of the book, which I obviously works for the tale, but when you sat down with your creative team, like how did you map out like the style of the book and that? Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, Andy Michael is the illustrator on this, and I've worked a number of times with him. It's like any other people. Once I find someone I like and click with, I try to work with them on bigger, more ambitious stuff. And this is just one of those things where we're just like, hey, you know, we're vibing. You get what I'm saying. I don't have to go in. Write these crazy Shakespearean scripts detailing, you know, the smallest minutia, because I have to say, hey, wide shot, someone looking from the road, and he's like, yeah, I got you. Or he'll come up with something and say, hey, you know, instead of this, why don't we try to go for this angle here? And it just, you know, makes it that much better. Yeah, I'm very hands-on, sometimes annoyingly, with the story when I'm first working with someone, or if it's something that I really, really, really care about. But I just want to make sure, oh, hey, we got to get this look perfect. Because comics is, you know, it's a 360 medium. You know, you're not just saying, okay, the script was good, but the art sucks, or the art is good, but the script sucks. You know, that does stand out. If it's all working, and hopefully people do think that this is working with them, for us, you know, it all comes together as like, wow, that was a good story altogether.
How do you prefer to start the writing process, if I may ask? You know, whether no matter what project you're working on, you know, whether it's Fog Line or if it was Kilchella or Kayfabe or whatnot, what was the writing process for you? Do you like to just kind of free flow ideas, or are you a very structured type of like pre-planner? Like, what's your motive when you sit down to write?
I mean, even the answer for this is going to be, you know, unstructured. It depends on the story, really. If it's a
Okay.
prompt, like if it's a work for hire prompt that someone gave me, I will follow that to the T. If it's a personal project, like a Fog Line or Kilchella, it depends. I might just come up with a outline and then, you know, build on it and just build on it until we have, okay, this is act one, two, three, and I know exactly where we're going. Kind of like just, you know, really putting together a roadmap of where you want to go. But then sometimes I think Kilchella was more like this, where it's like, all right, I have these characters and I kind of just feel it out as I go across the pages, where it's like, okay, I know I want to start here and end here, but what happens in the middle? And then, you know, just try to find the good beats to say, okay, this is the seventh page of a third issue, so I want to kind of put something so that way it keeps it exciting and flowing, but also, you know, fresh and moving things forward.
Okay. All right. Well, let's talk about Tales from the Pandemic. And I guess before we get into this project, what was your experience like with the pandemic, if I may ask?
I mean, it was pretty boring, right? I still had my office job. I still worked from there, and it was 2 miles away from home. So it's not like I had a drastic change. My wife worked from home, so that was different, but also cool because it's like, hey, I could come home and have lunch with her and go back to work if I went back to work. It's funny. I was just telling my wife now, it's like, you know, this thing's 3 years ago, and outside of just like going to the movies, we're still pretty much the same. Where it's like I go to work, I come home, I go to the gym now a couple times a day, but you know, other than that, like I'm not really going out to shows or doing a whole lot of, you know, like going to the bars and restaurants and such. We're pretty much homebodies now. I think more conditioned because of the pandemic, but yeah, you know, it's a lot of just okay, we're gonna be home, we're gonna order takeout from a place where, you know, they have the little plexiglass hole that that they put the food through. But yeah, I mean, I'm already in my 30s, so and settled down, you know, with a family. So it's not like we're doing a whole lot of going out. I know I have friends who were younger and friends who still have that nightlife, and they were just hating it because it's like, hey, I gotta go out and socialize, gotta do my stuff. You know, really like, you know, busy bees getting out there. But thankfully, you know, I didn't really have that in my life. I mean, some stuff did suck. I'm
Yeah,
not gonna lie,
right.
it's not like I came out unscathed, but it's like, okay, you know, I'm just really just gonna just hang out and just, you know, be home guy, and that felt comfortable. How about for you? How was it for you?
For me, I likewise. You know, I'm kind of past my partying years. You know, always having to go out and that. I'm past that. You know, and so for me, you know, with having various podcast projects. In fact, I started another podcast during the pandemic just to have something else to do. Yeah, I found it okay. Like, I didn't find it to be super anxiety inducing, but yet still was kind of a little bit like weird. I think my biggest thing was I was very, very concerned about my parents because they're up there in age. And to be honest, Mario, and I'm sure you maybe can agree with me on this, sometimes your parents don't want to listen to you. You know, like,
Of
oh,
course.
you know, and I was I they didn't. They actually listened to me, and I was like,
Nice.
listen. Don't go out, you know, don't go out, just have the groceries delivered. Well, we don't do that. We go to the store. Mom, just do it. You know what I'm saying? So that helped at the beginning, that I was very concerned about them. But as I saw that they were following the rules that they were being, you know, that we've all heard, you know, about, you know, going out with masks and all that jazz, they followed the rules and they came through unscathed. So I think that was my biggest concern, to be honest, with the pandemic, was just how they are, because you know, they're getting up there in age. they have some health issues, you know, and so all it would take would be, you know, one bout of COVID and who knows, you know. So you don't want to take that gamble, not with your folks.
It's good to hear you're looking out for everyone.
Yeah, I try, man. My mom, my folks raised me right, I guess. I don't know. but the Tales from the Pandemic, it's kind of, I guess, maybe a little bit of a Twilight Zone-like book. Would that be accurate to say?
Oh, yeah, 100,000%. Yes, it definitely is. It was something, you know, we originally made most of this back in 2020, actually. It was when the lockdown started and a bunch of my comic book friends started losing gigs and jobs. Books got delayed, flat out canceled. Some publishers went out of business. It was a whole, it was a shit show, excuse my language. But, you know, so I was thinking, okay, you know, what can we do, really, right? I mean, we're just sitting around doing nothing. We have some people. We wanted to, I had an idea to get something going to kind of just keep the engine running, right? I mean, you know, just to be like, hey, we're still working on comics. We're still putting out something. And so, yeah, with the Trump bucks that we got from, you know, sitting at home, I went ahead and financed, you know, a bunch of short stories that we put out in the first leg. We put it out on Gumroad for free for anyone who wanted to download it, but it was a limited release, right? So we went ahead and took it down, I think, like after a couple weeks. And it's been a dormant property for, It's been a dormant property for us, just, you know, it's like portfolio pieces and, you know, something nice to share if anyone had an opportunity for an anthology to submit. And then talking to Band of Bards, talking to Tim, you know, trying to see what we could do together, you know, just told them like, hey, you know, I don't really have anything fresh to make right now. But because, you know, I was still doing production for Killchella, but I was like, hey, I have this collection of short stories that's been, you know, sitting on my hard drive with no home. And, you know, after a lot of back and forth and just looking at what we could do to make it different from the original release, we went ahead and came to an agreement. And now we have a book. Comes out in stores next week. And it's fully sold out, too. So, you know.
Oh, excellent. Excellent.
Yeah, sorry to ramble like that. But,
No. I like the parody ads at the end.
Thanks. I made all that stuff.
Yeah, that is cool. I there's just something about a good parody of whatever it is, whether it's, you know, an advertisement or a parody about, you know, a story or whatnot. So I like the parody ads at the end. Those are pretty slick.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Honestly, every time I show someone a book, they're like, oh, the art's cool. I'm like, what about everything else? What about the fonts and, you know, the placement and the layout? I mean, whenever I look at like a production, I'm looking at everything, coloring and anyway. But yeah, thank you for shouting that out. Yeah, I was actually the production designer on the entire book. I don't really do it that much, but you know, I had a lot of fun with this. I made all the parody ads. I made the I didn't draw the stuff, of course, but you know, I put together all the copy and graphics that went on there, and I made the bio page and the bibliography in the front table of contents.
What were the challenges of doing that as opposed to just being a writer?
It's weird, but I'm going to say none because it's my place of zen. Like just sitting down with Photoshop and whatever, and just putting together, like finding fonts, buying fonts, changing and morphing things, looking at shape and how layouts. I felt like writing is more of a challenge for me most times, and just, you know, when I can sit down and actually do something creative like that, it's a place of calm for me.
I'm going to interrupt my conversation with Mario for just one moment to talk to you about World's Greatest Comics. They are your one-stop shop for all your comic book related needs. They've got single issues, collections, graphic novels, toys, collectibles, hundreds upon hundreds of back issues. Basically, they got your fandom covered. If you're in the Central Ohio area, you owe it to yourself to stop by the store located at 5974 Westerville Road in Westerville, Ohio. Or you can check them out online. WGComics.com is a website, and they're very active on their Facebook page. Just search for @WGComics. There's a ton of things, ladies and gentlemen. There are a ton of projects that Mario has. And I could run out of notepad if I wrote all of them down and whatnot. So Mario, I'm gonna turn the tables and let you tell the listeners about another project that you have in your catalog that you think they need to know about.
Oh, geez. All right. I was not prepared for this. Let me thank you. We talked about Fogline. We talked about Tales. We talked about Killchella. I have this week, tomorrow. Oh, geez. Tomorrow, I am part of a really cool anthology called The Color of Always, which is an LGBTQ plus collection of stories. And I did one with Laura Helsby and, honestly, was one of my top guys now, Jao Canola from Brazil on the color ink, and Scott Ewan on lettering, called Tethered. And it is a it's my stab at rom-com. Everything I do, I'm trying to audition for an RG job. I'm not kidding. So I try to draw a lot of like people, like friends and people hanging out and doing stuff as to show the bosses at Archie, hey, I can do Riverdale. But yeah, Tethered is a story about two people who, in that beginning stages of the relationship, so they're just, you know, texting each other back and forth. They're kind of nervous and don't know what to say. So it's, the whole thing is told from two different sides of where they are through their phones as they're just texting each other. And you know, I don't want to give the ending, but it really is a good heartfelt story. And I don't know if you would agree, but I thought it was a pretty good you know, way to show that whole awkward phase of, you know, when things are starting out.
I did read Tethered and I liked it. It had just a really, I don't know how to describe it. They just had a, like, I don't want to use the term ordinary, but it kind of just had like an ordinary slice of life to it that, yeah, I think no matter who you are, you can relate to it.
Yeah, that's what we're going for, honestly. I mean, it's a real world type of situation. It's not fantastical where it's like, you know, weird stuff happens. It's not a regular show where it starts out normal and then aliens in the end, you know?
Yeah, right.
It's just really just, you know, looking at this common phenomenon of just, especially a new age, you know, dating world where it's like, you know, the computer in your pocket is just as big or if not more important slice than anything else.
Mm-hmm. Well, where can folks find your catalog? I still got a few other questions we got to talk and a few other topics to talk about, but since we're kind of in that kind of segue, if you will, where can, mm-hmm, folks check out your catalog, where they can get their hands on copies of the books, et cetera, et cetera. So fill us in.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't have a web store yet. I think I should get someone soon, but the publishers are always the best place to find stuff. So yeah, Killchella, you know, Scout is selling all issues and all variant covers directly, but I think it should still be available through Diamond or Lunar if you want to go to your comic book shop. Same thing with Tales from the Pandemic. Band of Bards is the publisher on that. We do have a second print coming. The first one's completely sold out, but yeah, comic shops can order or you can buy it through Band of Bards directly. A Wave Blue World is the publisher for The Color of Always anthology. They're great guys. I really like working with them. They do a lot of big books. And they're really personable too to work with, which is nice. But yeah, same thing. You can go through Diamond or Lunar to your comic book shop as well as just buy it directly through their website.
So since we're talking about comics here, I failed to ask you, who are some of your favorite comic book characters or creators?
Oh, we'll start with characters. That's more fun.
Okay. All right, let's do it.
You know, my first love is X-Men, always. It's one comic I've read my entire life consistently, and I have to say. I mean, not my entire life, like from like age 3. Even in the quote-unquote bad Bendis years, I was still like, hell yeah, let's do this X-Men. So yeah, X-Men, I'd have to say Cyclops, Havoc, Wolverine, you know, the A-listers of that, but also give me Nate Gray, give me some, you know, some random weirdos from, you know, the Age of Apocalypse, you know, some throwback characters as well. Daredevil is a big favorite of mine. I have omnibuses of all of the runs from the Kevin Smith run all the way up on through to, you know, Bendis and Brubaker. Mark Waid. Who else? Green Lantern. Hal Jordan, Green Lantern. He's one of my favorites of all time as well.
Cool. How about some creators?
Oh, I got to start with the Wednesday Night Messiah, Ed Brubaker, of course.
Okay.
That guy, you know, he, everything he puts out, it just feels like it's just Eisner bait and gold. But, you know, love that guy. We're going a little deeper, though. Let's say Alex DeCamp. Yeah, Alex is really... really cool. She's more influential from like a comic industry approach than the writing itself, but yeah, Alex is someone I'm always like, okay, yeah, Victor Santos is kind of one of my early mentors as well. I don't know if you know his Polar series from Dark Horse.
The name rings a bell, Mario, but I can't say that I've ever picked up any project of his.
That's all right. Yeah, Victor Santos, he's, like I said, he was an early mentor of mine. I know he's more of an illustrator, but he does have his own stuff that he writes as well and puts out. And I think he just, you know, he's a great 360 creator and that he can do pretty much all of it. Modern people, Luana Vecchio, you know, Lovesick, Bolero, can't seem to some of the stuff she's working on, but you know, that's someone who I feel like it's just like, wow, this person feel like they came out of nowhere from Italy over the past 2 years and they've just been rising and rising meteorically. I love what she's doing. Who else is out there that I'm really feeling? Is it weird if I say like Jamie Rich?
No.
I mean, he's more of a, I mean, he's definitely more of a Batman. I don't know if he's still with Batman. He's definitely more of an editor now. But I mean, his books, 12 Reasons I Love Her, You Have Killed Me. I think he was one of the minds behind what's the one with the housewife that was killing people? Lady Killer. I think he's one of the minds behind Lady Killer with Joelle Jones. But yeah, I mean, Jamie Rich's stuff was influential when I was first starting to get into creating comics. Just looking at, okay, this isn't big guns noir like Sin City, but this also isn't, you know, Marvel DC superhero stuff. It's showing me a different way forward. Like Andy Park's, his Capote book with Chris Samney, that was really influential in, you know, shaping how I would, you know, approach writing. And a weird one is The Alcoholic by Jonathan Ames and Dean Haspiel. That was a Vertigo book that came out like probably like 2008, but it's just this slice of life, semi-autobiographical story about an alcoholic. I was like, wow, you can make comics like this? This, you know, it definitely was something that opened my eyes. It wasn't like something with dragons or some type of fantastical world-ending thing. It's just, honestly, it's just a guy. Not even like a Scott Pilgrim. It's going to be some like weird gimmick twist in it. Just a guy with a drinking problem. It starts off in a car with an old lady blowing him. And he's like, how did I get here? But still.
When you start a book like that, I mean.
Yeah. Just like, okay, her dentures came out. And they're like, what is this book? And then it goes from there. Like, okay.
Can we chat about your award-winning short film, The Chart?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Did you watch it?
I watched it. I very much appreciated it. I
Thank you.
Great ending that I don't want to ruin it for anyone. You just need to go to your website and check it out. But let's talk a little bit. How did you get involved in the project? I know you wrote it, but how did the pieces all fit together for this puzzle?
This is a beautiful story. This is something a long time ago when I was younger and stupid. I used to do stand-up comedy in New York City. I didn't live in New York City at the time. I lived where I live now. So I would drive an hour and a half several days a week to go to New York City and do comedy. And I met, of course, you know, when you're starting out, you see the really cool kids sitting at the end. And then you find a group of losers who are looking at those cool kids together. And then eventually you all become friends together. So I found a friend group. And Tara Canastrasi and Kim Hellam, who are the masterminds behind We Stand Comedy, which is a growing production company now. We became friends and they wanted to put together a sketch series. And we got, you know, we kind of got greenlit for a pilot to make. And of course, that all fell through. But this was one of the sketches that I had, you know, submitted. And yeah, I'm really happy that, you know, when I got the phone call one day, they're like, hey, remember that script that we wrote for the failed pilots? We want to make that one. I was like, oh, hell yeah. So, yeah, I mean, this is just, you know, I think how it came together is just a lot of, you know, friends just riffing off each other, growing together, and then just good luck also.
And it was in several different film festivals and won prizes that had to make you all feel like, you know, just top of the world.
Absolutely. I made a joke. It's won festivals in America and Italy and a couple of places. And it's just like, from the old country to the old neighborhood, you know, we're bringing home the trophy. Yeah. I mean, you know, this is definitely, it was something awesome. It wasn't something that really helped me with comics because it wasn't like, you know, producers or editors, whoever, just like, hey, you know, we see you won, you know, first place at some random festival. But it definitely is like a, it felt nice, especially at a time when I wasn't really starting to get momentum in comics yet to have like, okay, this is something to help keep the creative juices flowing, to at least show like I have potential, to show, you know, family and friends like, hey, we can do this.
Would you do another film project?
If we had the actual production in time. I mean, Tara and Kim are really busy now. They're doing quite a bit in New York. And I'm doing comic stuff. I would love to take another stab at it with them. I know Tara is doing, you know, Chaz Palmieri, the actor.
Yes.
Yes. Yeah, I think she's like the co-host on his podcast. She's always on his podcast. So they're, you know, she's getting really heavily involved in the Italian American, you know, comedy market and blowing up that way. So I have a couple of pitches I want to give her and say, hey, you know, now that you're connected, what do you say we do this again and do it the right way?
Chaz Palminteri is his film A Bronx Tale is a favorite of mine. Like when you look at that kind of that genre I think A Bronx Tale is tops in my humble opinion.
There's a whole Mario line in that, wasn't there? It's like Mario's a psycho. Like, yeah. Yes, that's fun.
Yeah. Yeah, I just think in that genre of like mobster films or whatnot, gangster films, whatever you want to call them, I think to me, A Bronx Tale, number one. I mean, above all, just I love that film. I really do.
It's a good one. But yeah, no, Tara is one of his main people, especially, you know, publicly facing for doing his, you know, because I think Chaz goes on tour and does comedy, at least speaking engagements, but he brings Tara with him to open up for him. Sorry, I know this isn't a whole plug for her. But, you know, I would
love to no, that's to all right.
To go back to the question, yeah, I mean, I would definitely, you know, get back out there. There's been rumblings of Killcella, people being interested in making the films for that. But, you know, I just tell Scout, whoever is looking at it, like, yeah, just, you know, it'll be awesome, but it's not real until someone, you know, cuts the check, right? And it's just talk.
Absolutely.
I don't think I would be involved in that, though. I think it would just be like, okay, here's the rights, and then I'd be the executive producer for a vanity credit.
Well, do you have any upcoming appearances or anything as we start to wind down here? Or any new projects you want to mention real quick or anything along those lines?
Yes. So I have a Kickstarter starting on Monday for One True Love. It's a 90-page graphic novel about two mobsters on the run after committing a heist, and they're hiding out at a friend's home in Hollywood. And then, of course, just, you know, paranoia and lust and all sorts of stuff gets in the way and rips the friends apart.
Awesome. Cool. Is that with the same crew that you've worked with on some of your other projects as well?
Yeah, Jay Sheik is the artist on that. I've worked with him on a couple of anthologies. He was one of the creators who joined me for Tales of the Pandemic. You know, like I said, if I work with someone, I try to work with them again and again. And he's just someone who just, you know, we clicked, he gets my vision, you know, and he also is really, really good at bringing ideas to the table and says, hey, you know, what if we approach the story like this? What if I change the setting from like indoor nighttime to outdoor by the beach or something. I mean, it really tries to make it feel, you know, more photogenic and beautiful with the shots and with the framing. I have nothing but great things to say about that guy. And I love working with him.
Cool. And that kicks off this Monday, the 29th, correct?
Yeah, we're kicking off on Monday, the 29th. I think 10:30 a.m. Eastern time is when it starts. We have, it's a pretty low goal. It's like 7,000 for a 90-page book. But we have I call it a reverse stretch goal. So for the first 36 hours, the people who back physical books will get a free zine, just collecting a couple of short stories that Jay and I have made over the years from, you know, smaller anthologies or just books that just never, you know, like anthologies that never made it to completion, but we still did all the work. So yeah, we're just, you know, putting that stuff together to give, you know, to give a little thank you for the day one people.
Cool. All right. Do you have other cool stretch goals or perks that you would like to highlight real quick about the Kickstarter?
Yeah, thank you. I mean, I'm really happy you asked about that. We have, you know, I mean, the standard stretch goals. I'm not going to give people bookmarks and pins and all that for Kafka stuff. I'm just going to, we're going to give a better quality product. So, you know, I think if we hit 8,000, we're going to have upgraded paper and cover, of course, right? We give it a more prestige feel in terms of, you know, the presentation of the physical book. So This is a weird one, but for Fogline, when that book came out, I had a in-world packaging where I had made, spoiler alerts, I made a police evidence bag that the book came in. It's like, instead of just putting it in like a Mylar bag with a board, I had custom printed bags that look like police evidence bags. The book was inside. Inside was an in-world prop from the story as well. I might give spoilers on that. So we're thinking of doing something like that as well. I call this the bag of cash, where the plastic bag that it goes in will just, I talked to the printers and they said that they can do a money print where it just looks like a pile of loose cash, on the bag. And I also found for very cheap burlap sacks that I can put the book in. So that's what we're thinking of, because it's a heist, where it's a post heist book that's not money. So we're thinking, all right, let's put this presentation out there.
Dude, that is very creative and very innovative.
Oh, thank you. And then, of course, the final stretch goal is the book gets bigger. Right now we're 8.5 by 5.5, but if we make a certain amount over, we're going to give bigger dimensions to the book too, and add an extra 10 pages to it.
All right. I hope that everything, and I'm sure it will. I'm sure everybody will jump on there, and everything will be smooth sailing for you. It sounds like a great project, man.
Oh, thank you. Appreciate that.
Well, let's talk about social media, website, where folks can follow you, Mario, online, so they can keep tabs on the Kickstarter, on your projects, check out the short film, The Chart, et cetera, et cetera. So hit us with those social media and that website info, please.
Yeah, across the board, except for Instagram for some reason, I am The Other Mario C. The website, The Other Mario C. Twitter, The Other Mario C. Blue Sky, people start using that. I'm on there, The Other Mario C. I never did Mastodon, but what was the other one that took off for a little bit?
I can't remember, and I don't remember what one it was.
Yeah, I'm on there too. Instagram is Another Mario C. Hit me up. I'm always, I try not to just keep it about work stuff. I like to show people this is a real person behind the keyboard, and I'm not just like a bot trying to, just shill constantly. I don't know. There's a lot of like creators like that. It just feels weird. Which is promo, promo, promo. But it's like, are you a real person? With thoughts and feelings. Mm-hmm. So you'll see random pictures of me, my family, or just food. My wrestling. Oh man, my workouts in the mornings. I often take a picture of the wrestling shirt that I'm wearing and just tag the wrestlers. So you get some of that. But yeah, the Other Mario C is my Twitter, and Another Mario C is my Instagram.
Well, there you go. Mario, thank you so very much for taking some time out of your busy schedule to sit down and chat with me this evening.
Oh, yeah. I mean, no problem. Thank you for the opportunity. I mean, it's great to talk wrestling with people. I mean, I'm watching wrestling right now as we're doing this.
With that, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to throw it to a quick break. And on the other side of the break, I'll be back to wrap up the episode. Well, there you have it, ladies and gentlemen, my conversation with Mario Candelaria, talking about his many different comics that he's produced, and please check out his stuff. In fact, as you heard about, One True Love is a new project, the Kickstarter's out there, the link is in the show notes, so definitely go over, check it out if you want to get more details. And I want to thank Mario once again for coming on. I really enjoyed chatting with him. I mean, he loves comics, he loves wrestling. Same here. So it was a very easy way to connect between the two of us. But again, go check out Mario's stuff. And I think you'll find something unique and different and probably something that you're going to like in his big catalog of comics. All right. Well, that being said, ladies and gentlemen, it's time for me to let you know where you can get in touch with me if you would like to do so. You could shoot me an email if you'd like to be a little more old school. JohnOrlando@pvdcast.com is the email address. You can find me on Twitter. My personal Twitter handle is @PVDMVP. And you can leave me a message over on the Facebook and Instagram feeds. Just search for @PVDcast. And if you need to let some folks know where they can hear the PVDcast, well, there's a bunch of avenues for that as well. First off, PVDcast.com is the online home of yours truly, and probably the best place to get episodes of this beloved podcast. But it's also available through all those major podcasting outlets, like Spotify, Stitcher Radio, Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio app, Google Podcasts, etc., etc. Just go to the search bar in your favorite app, type in PVDcast. Sometimes you have to put my name after it, and you should find it. And I need you to do me a favor, especially when you are listening through one of those podcasting apps. Please rate and review. Rating and reviewing pushes me up through the algorithm, and it helps me out tremendously. And additionally, you might want to subscribe so that you never miss an episode of the PVDcast. But there's a couple other avenues that you can hear this great podcast. First of all, every Wednesday night at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, you can check out a little Facebook broadcast that I like to do through the Facebook page. And again, it's an easy, quick way to hear the week's episode. But you can also check it out through CROC Radio. That's right, Croc Radio in British Columbia. British Columbia's greatest radio station on the internet, CROC Radio. I'm happy to have the PVDcast there entertaining those folks out in Western Canada as well. So there you go. There's four different ways that you can hear this great podcast. And I think it's about time for me to go ahead and start wrapping things up. So I'm going to get on out of here. I want to thank you one more time for checking out the episode. And I will chat at each and every one of you later. Stay righteous, stay independent, and stay safe and healthy. Following has been a presentation of John Orlando Enterprises, LLC, copyright 2020.